The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Towards the end of the Parashah, in Sim Kof Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Vayiki Zokin Yitzchok Vatichenu Einav Nerois. When Yitzchak was old and he was hard of seeing, difficult to see, he called to Esav, his older son, and he said to him, "My son, I am old, and I do not know the day of my death." Because I'll tell us, Rashi brings that at this time Yitzchak reached 122 years old. And as I'll say, that when a person reaches 5 years before the age at which his mother or father died, so then he should be cautious, he should start worrying that perhaps his time is also coming. So since Yitzchak reached this age, so he said that he doesn't know the day of my death, perhaps I'll, as long as my mother, or perhaps I'll live as long as my father. Therefore, he wanted to bless his children. He told Esav, "Go take your kelim, take your vessels, your bow and arrow. Say I saw them with you. Go and hunt for me. Bring me back some game." And from the game, some very good food, tasty food. I may eat from it. In order that I can bless you before I die. And Rivka, his wife, the wife of Yitzchak, she was listening as he told Esav to go into the field. Rivka said to Yaakov, the younger son, that I heard that your father said this to Esav, that bring me game, bring me, and make good food for me in order that I may eat, in order that I may bless you before I die. So Rivka said, "V'atov v'nishma v'telil asher ani matzav Esav." Now my son, listen to what I should tell you. You go to the sheep and take from there two goats and make them into good food for your father, kasher or ev, like he loves. Because now tell us, why did she choose goats? Because the taste of goats is similar to the taste of deer. Bring it to your father that he may eat. So in order that he should bless you. Yaakov said to Rivka, his mother, Esav is someone who has much hair. Arms, his whole body was full of hair. And I'm a person who's very smooth. Maybe my father will feel us. And he will see that this is a fraud. And instead of brocha, he will give us klolok, curses. So if the mother said, "Don't worry, my son, I will accept the curse. Listen to my voice and go and take like I told you." So he went, took the goats and made matamim from them. And Rivka took the clothing of Esav, Esav had some very valuable clothing, which he didn't trust by his wives. So he kept them by his mother. In fact, the Chazal tell us that this clothing that he had taken from Nimrod. Nimrod was one of the kings of the time. And Nimrod had this clothing because he had taken this from, this goes back to Adam Arishon, to the first man. These were the clothing that were made for Adam and Chava, for the first man and woman. But Albeish, Latika, Rivka has been the ace of the Noah God Lacham. So Rivka took this clothing, which was by your house, And she clothed her son, her younger son, Israel. So now it will have the appearance of Israel. And she took the skins, goats, and she covered his arms and his neck. And she gave him the matami, and she gave him the food that he made, bread. And he came to his father. And his father said, "Who are you, my son?" He says, "I am Esau, the oldest son, your firstborn, and I have done like you have commanded. Now please eat in order that you may bless me." And Yitzchok said, "Mazomi Hakalim Tabini, how is it possible that you were able to capture this game so quickly?" And Yaakov answered, "Ki Hikro Hashem Elokecha Lefonai, Hashem prepared for me. Game in order that I should capture it quickly." Yitzchok said, "Come, that I may feel you," because he wasn't sure if it was Esav. "I'll see if you are Esav or not." And he felt him. He said, "Hakol kol Yaakov ayadai vide Esav." The voice is the voice of Yaakov, but the hands are the hands of Esav. And he could not recognize him because they felt like Esav, and he blessed him. Eight, and then he blessed him. He said, Hashem should give you from the dew of the heaven and from the fat of the land and from the multitude of the grains and of the wine. Nations shall serve you, kingdom shall bow to you, and you shall be a master over your brother. And the children of your mother shall bow to you. And those that curse you shall be cursed, and those that bless you shall be blessed. And then when Yitzchok finished blessing Yaakov, as soon as Yaakov went out, Esav came in with his game. He told his father, "Bless me." Yitzchok said, "Who are you?" He said, "I am your firstborn, Esav." Yitzchok trembled with a great fear. He said, "But who was that brought me game that I just ate from? And I blessed him. He also should be blessed." And when Esav heard this, so he wept bitterly. And he said to his father, "Bless me also." And Yitzchok said, Your brother came. With a conspiracy, and Vayikach Birchosecho, and he has taken your brocha." Then Esav said, "Now I know why he has called Yaakov. Because Yaakov means to grab a hold of. When Yaakov was born, he was grabbing a hold of the foot, the heel of Esav." He said, "And he has now grabbed a hold of me twice. As Becherosi Lokoch, first he took my birthright," because earlier in the center it tells how Yaakov went and bought the birthright from Esav. Esav was the firstborn. "And now he's also taking my brochas." And he says, Did you not save me at least one brocha?" Yitzchok said, "How can I give you a brocha when I have made Yaakov a master over everything, over you and everything that you have?" So Esav kept appealing, "At least give me a bracha." So Yitzchok said, "That your dwelling place shall be the fat of the land, and the dew of the heaven shall be above you. And you shall live by the sword. You shall serve your brother. Kasher Torid, when he will be in trouble, then Ufaratu Ulaim al Savarecho, then your yoke shall come off of your neck." Esau hated Yaakov on this, that he stole the brocha. Esau said that when his father will die, I will kill Yaakov. Then Rivka heard about this, she knew of it, so she sent Yaakov away. This is the classical story of how Yaakov stole the brochas from his brother Esau. And these brachas were very, very important. In fact, the Vilna Gaon writes in his Avodah Shel Pesach that all of the tevis, all of the goodness Klal Yisrael has in this world and in the next world hinged on these brachas. These are the brachas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Abraham when he told him to leave Eretz Yisrael, to leave Ur Kasdim and go to Eretz Yisrael. Lech Lecha Me'atzecha, I will bless you. And these are the brachas that he gave again to Abraham at the Akedah when Abraham offered Yitzchak. And these are the brachas that Abraham gave then to Yitzchak. And now these were the brachas that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov. And the Gaon says that had Esau taken these brachas, so then we would have been lost in this world and in the next world. This is how important these brachas were. Now there are many questions here, which we'll try to explain somewhat this evening. Firstly, it seems quite evident that of the two brothers, Yaakov was the righteous one and Esau was the wicked one. So why is it then that Yitzchak chose to bless Esau and not Yaakov? You see, Rivka knew this. This is why she was adamant that the bracha should go to Yaakov and not to Esau. But how is it possible that Yitzchak could give the brachas to a rosha, to a wicked son, rather than to Yaakov? And if we say that he wasn't aware, this is difficult to understand. How is it possible that Yitzchak was not aware of what was going on in his own house? One question. The second question is, after Yitzchak learned that he gave the brachas to Yaakov and not to Esau, and there was fraud and deceit, then he said, Gam Boruch Yia, let him be blessed. And he affirmed the brachas that he gave to Yaakov. Why did he do this? If he was so adamant in giving the brachas to Esau, so then why, when he found that he was deceived, did he say, Gam Boruch Yia, let Yaakov be blessed? This is the second question. Third question. When Yitzchak learned that he gave the brachas to the wrong one, now Esau appealed to him that he also should have a bracha. So the bracha he gave Esau was al chayav chatichya, that you should live by the sword. This is not exactly a bracha, but evidently there was a declaration. He declared that you will live by the sword. What made him declare this now? If he had foreseen that this was the destiny of Esau, so then in the original brachas he should have declared he should live by the sword. And if he did not foresee this, so why now did he say he should live by the sword? This is the third question. In order to understand this, we must go to the beginning of the Sedna, where the Torah tells us many important things in relation to the birth of Yaakov and Esau and their upbringing. And this is of paramount importance to us, because as we'll see, Yaakov actually was the basis of Klal Yisrael. We are called the Bnei Yaakov or the Bnei Yisrael. That's Yaakov's name. Yaakov's name was Yisrael. In the beginning of the Sedna, the Torah tells us, Ve'ele told us Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham ha'ele Yitzchak. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchak, Yitzchak ben Aboim Shona. Yitzchak was 40 years old, the kachte es Rivka bas Besula Aram and Mipan Aram, Achais Lova Naram ele Yishon. Yitzchak was 40 years old when he married Rivka. This took place 3 years after Yaakov ben Yitzchak. Because Yitzchak was 37 at the time that he was offered. Abraham offered him as a sacrifice. This was 3 years later. Vayetar Yitzchak l'Hashem l'neichuk ishtek yakorehi. Vayoseh le Hashem atar Rivka ishtek. Rivka did not give birth. And later on, Torah tells us that Rivka gave birth when Yitzchak was 60. This means that they were married for 20 years. He waited first 10 years because Rivka was very young. first got married. Then he waited another 10 years. And when he saw still that Rivka did not give birth, he realized she was an Akorah, she was barren. So he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They both prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered them. And Rivka conceived. And the two sons, she conceived and she was bearing twins. And the twins, while she was pregnant, were struggling in the womb. And she said, if this is the situation, so what did I need this for? And she went to seek out Hashem. Now, we can see from here that this struggling was not one of natural phenomena. It was not one of a natural process. Because if Rivka waited 20 years, Rivka was a very, very great tzaddikus, like we see from last week's seder. If Rivka waited 20 years to have a child, and now she has a child, so she wouldn't be complaining about the normal birth pains. She wouldn't say, what do I need this for? And she would go, Lidreis Hashem. She would go to seek out Hashem. So there was something abnormal going on here. And when she went to seek out Hashem, where did she go? She went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. So we have mentioned in the past few shiurim that Shem, the son of Noach, who lived 9 generations before Abraham, but he lived to a ripe old age, and he was during the time of Abraham. And later on, his grandson, Aver, they had a yeshiva. And it was to this yeshiva that Rivka went to ask what was happening. What was happening? There were a tremendous ritzitza. There was a tremendous struggle in the womb. And the Chazal tell us two things. One is, Kishohei Severes Apishei Terim, Shashem Levi Yaakov Rotzim Apacheis Lotzeis. When she would walk by the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. So then, one of the sons, Yaakov, would try to go out of the womb. Then when she would walk by Pisgah Avedis Zorah, she would walk by houses of idolatry, then the other son, Esav, would try to go out of the womb. This is one thing that was happening. Second thing is that they were each struggling with each other, trying to conquer each other in order to inherit both worlds. I will have a little more explanation on that in a few minutes. But they were struggling and trying to conquer each other to inherit both worlds. Now, this doesn't mean they weren't born yet, but it means that their destinies, they were destined to be conflicting with each other. And there was a struggle going on. So it was a great struggle, it was an abnormal struggle, and Rivka felt this. And therefore she went to Lidreis Hashem. What did Shem tell her? Ayema Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu told Shem, gave Shem a prophecy to tell her. Ayema Hashem lo, Shnei goyim v'itnei. There are two nations in your womb. And two kingdoms from your womb will separate. One kingdom will gain its strength from the other. The older one will serve the younger one. Kodesh Baruch Hu told her through Shem that these are not merely sons that you're giving birth to. First of all, they're not sons, but they're nations. Shnei goyim. They are nations. And the word goyim should be spelled with a vav. Since it's not spelled with a vav, so it's read as Ge'im. Ge'im means Go'er, something very glorious, aristocracy. Not only are they merely nations, but they're nations of the great aristocrats, great aristocracy. Ushnei le'umim mime'ayach yiporedu. Then the Torah refers to them as le'umim. Ein le'om ele malchus. Not only are they nations and not only are they aristocrats, but they're le'umim, they're empires, kingdoms. From these two will come great empires. And mime'ayach yiporedu, they will separate from your womb. Separate means that once they will be born, they will go in completely opposite directions. They are contrary to each other. Ula'om milom yamotz, and one empire will draw its strength from the second. This means that both cannot rule at the same time. If one will rule, then he will draw his strength from the other. The other will be at the bottom. And when the second one will rule, then the first one will be at the bottom. The Gemara explains what does that mean. The Rashi brings Le'nismalei Tzur ele mi'churbonish of Yerushalayim. That Tzur, which was one of the cities of Esav, would have its glory only from the churban, only from the destruction of Yerushalayim. And when Yerushalayim will be b'minyonei, when that will be in its glory, then the seed of Esav will be in destruction. But both cannot rule at the same time. Ve'rav yaveh tzohir, and in the end of days, the older one will serve the younger. Then the prodigies said, came time to give birth and there were twins. The first one came out, he was red. He was red color and red hair, and he was full of hair. And they called him Esau. He was red as a simon of the Shefech Dan. This was a sign that he would be a Shefech Domim. He would be someone whose malocha, whose occupation will be with the spilling of blood. Then his brother came out, and his hand was holding on to the heel of Esau. By and they called him Yaakov. Yitzchok was 60 years old at that time. What does it mean that Yaakov was holding on to his heel? So Rashi tells us, that the first one will not bring his empire to its ultimate perfection before the second one will come and take it from him. And then the two lads grew up. The Chazal tell us as long as they were small, so you couldn't identify them. We didn't know what the character of each one was. But as they grew up, then we could tell them. Esav was someone who knew how to hunt, a man of the field. Yaakov ishtam yeshivayol. Yaakov was a man of temimus. Temimus means he was very upright. Yeshivayol, you need more attention. Yitzchok loved Esav, kitzai b'fiv, because he would bring his hunting to the mouth of Yitzchok. Rivka ever says Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. Now here's the pasuk which tells us why Yitzchok chose Esav and why Rivka chose Yaakov. It tells us Yitzchok chose Esav because tzai b'fiv, because he would bring his hunting to the mouth of Yitzchok. Now this is something which is very strange. Yitzchok was the son of Abraham. He was the cornerstone of Klal Yisrael. Did he love Esav because Esav would bring him food? So the Chazal explained, Tzayid b'fiv means not that he would bring game to the mouth of Esav, to the mouth of Yitzchok, but that Yitzchok was game for Esav. Yitzchok was game for Esav. Esav was able to deceive Yitzchak. He was able to deceive Yitzchak to the point that Yitzchak was hunting grounds, was game for Esav, through Esav's mouth. How would he deceive him? So the Gemara tells us he would ask his father all kind of shailos, all kind of very, very difficult shailos, difficult questions in halacha, which would give the impression that he was very, very righteous and very zealous and very concerned. He was very fruit. He would ask him, there's a halacha that on anything that grows, any of the crops, you must give a certain percentage to the kahanim. So he would ask, what about straw that was left over? Do you also have to give to the kahanim or not? What about salt? Is salt considered something that grows because it comes from the ground? Since it doesn't grow from the ground, then it's exempt from this halacha. He would come with all of these shaylos, and would give the impression that he was very righteous and very fruitful. So this is what the Chazal means, that he was side the thief, that Yitzchak was game for Esav. He would fall into Esav's mouth. Rivka, she saw through this. And therefore she loved Yaakov, not Esav. Yaakov was just the opposite. States Yaakov, Ishtam, he was upright. Yosheva Olim, he dwelled in the tents. What does it mean he dwelled in the tents? The Targum says, Beis Ulfona, Rashi tells us, Be'ehel Shul Torah. Yaakov dwelled in the tents of Torah. And he was very straight and upright. And he was Tefer Kibarei, that whatever he meant, he said, whatever he did not mean, he didn't say. Just the opposite to Esav. Now, how was it possible, though, that Yitzchak should be so deceived by Esav? And here lies a very important point. A little later in the Sedra, it tells us when Esav was 40 years old, he took wives. Now, why did he do this when he was 40 years old? So Rashi tells us, Esav was compared to a hazir. Where he compared Esav to a hazir, to a pig. Why? A hazir hazeh kishu sheche peshe tlofa blenge v'u shani tohor. When the hazir sits down, he puts his hoofs out. Most animals put their hoofs beneath them. But the hazir puts his hoofs out. The hazir has one of the symbols of a kosher animal. An animal must have two sides. He must have a split hoof, and he must chew his cud. The hazir has one. And since he doesn't have both, he's treif, he's very treif. But he sits with his hoofs out to show the world that he's kosher. Really treif. It says Kachoy Esav. This was the leader, this was the character of Esav. There are some people or some animals that are very treif. They don't try to project an image of kashrus. The hazir is treifus, and still he projects an image of kashrus. Kachoy Esav. Why did Esav get married when he was 40 years old? Because his father got married when he was 40. Esau wanted to show the world that he's a tzaddik like his father. He's righteous like his father. So here he was going around and he was kidnapping wives from other husbands, the Chazal tell us. And when he was 40 years old, he got married to show the world that he was a very righteous person. This is the midah, this is the quality of the chazir. Another interesting point is in the parsha, where the Torah tells us the different trefa animals, so it gives four examples. One is a chazir, and one is a camel, and one is a rabbit, and so forth. And the Medrash there says that each one, besides representing an animal, it represents a malchus, one of the empires. It says the chazir represents Esau, the empire of Esau. And the rabbis teach that every animal has two signs of kashrus in order to be kosher. One is an external sign, and one is an internal sign. Split hoofs, this is an external sign. The chewing of the cud, this is an internal sign. The chazir, he has an external sign of kashrus. This means that from the outside he looks kosher. You cannot tell from the outside that he's not kosher. It's impossible. He looks as kosher as the bull or the cow, or the sheep or the goat. There's no way that you can identify any less kashrus in the chazir from the goat or the bull from external physical signs. Why then is he afraid? Because he lacks the internal kashrus, sign of kashrus, the chewing of the cup. And it says, Chazir zu Esav. This is the kingdom of Esav. Here the Chazal is telling us the secret to the empire of Esav. Esav is going to be an individual, or a nation, or a kingdom that will have all of the external signs of righteousness. Don't make any mistake about it. All of the external signs of righteousness. But they will be as traitors as can be, as wicked as can be, because they will lack the internal signs. But from merely external examination, you will not be able to detect this. This was the power of Esav. And we see also the fact that he was able to deceive Yitzchok with his mouth and with his questions. We see that he was not an amateur, but he was a great expert. Very, very great expert. Who is the nation that's to come to Esau from Esau? Chazal tell us that the nation that would come from Esau is Edom. Called Edom. And Edom was to be the father of Rome. See, Roman. The Roman Empire is the nation that would come from Esau. When the Pasuk says, Shnei Goyim, two nations, and Goyim is spelled without a vav, which means Geyim. Geyim is nobility, aristocrats. So here the Chazal tell us that the two nations that would come from Esav and Yaakov would be very, very aristocratic, noble nations. And Rashi brings the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which states, Zu Rebbe Dantinon Dantinonis. Shalei posku v'shulchonim, lei chazeres v'lei shum, lei v'yimei sacham v'lei v'yimei sacham. During the Roman Empire, one of the kings of Rome was known as Antoninus. And at the same time lived Rabbi Yehuda Anossi. Rabbi Yehuda Anossi was the master of the Mishnah, the one who recorded the entire Mishnah. These generations where he had literally hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands of Talmidei Chachamim working at recording the Mishnah, which was a massive undertaking. Rabbi Yehuda Anossi was so wealthy that he sponsored this massive undertaking. Not only he was so wealthy that he was able to sponsor this, but he was on equal level with the king of Rome. And they were very good friends. They would get together many times. So here we have an heir from Yaakov, Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, and an heir from Esau, antinomous. And the Gemara tells us that so wealthy that they were, that never from their table was there not present fresh vegetables or radishes or lettuce, be it in the summertime or the wintertime. And you can imagine in those days in the wintertime what it meant to have fresh vegetables on one's table. They had to be brought across continents. Now the Maral Niprag, the Sefer Guraya, brings out here that what is so important about having fresh vegetables on one's table, the wintertime and the summertime? You can imagine to have perhaps maybe good wines, good meat, but vegetables. So he says this is not a symbol necessarily of great enjoyment or great indulgence, but rather this is a symbol of aristocracy. This is a symbol of importance, of aristocracy, of nobility. And this we see that at their very birth, the Torah depicted this, and we see the development of this. That these nations would be nations that will keep very, very high standards. Many times you have nations that are not demanding of themselves. They do not demand standards of themselves, the way they live or the way they dress, or the standard of discipline or cleanliness or conduct or so forth. Not so with the nation of Yaakov, that from here would come Israel, and not so with the nation of Esau. Another thing that we see, that when it comes to this power of deceit from Rome, which history books record that Rome brought a whole new civilization to the world. Fact is, they are known as the father of the Western culture. And they brought a whole new era of social justice and social law and so forth. History books will record that externally they had beautiful laws, beautiful society. But internally, it was decrepit. Internally, it was rotten, which eventually caused its downfall. Internally, there was stealing. There was murder, distortion, scandal and lie. It was a beautiful shell, but the inside was full of shekel. I once heard a lecture from an historian who was showing the difference between the Greek culture and the Roman culture. He said that at the archaeological finds, the ruins of the Greek temples and the Greek buildings, they found that when something was built of marble, it was solid marble. And the ruins of the Roman buildings, it was faced with marble. But basically, it was stone. And this was a quality in the Roman culture. The Greeks were known for their wisdom. They were perfectionists. They were people who gave their lives for their wisdom and for their culture. The Romans, this was commerce. They were interested in getting the job done. They were interested in extracting whatever possible. And this became the father of the Western culture. Again, we see this Medo, this power of external projection. Another point. We have many nations in the world that are not the least righteous, but they do not try to project an image of righteousness. Russia necessarily, I don't know, tries to project an image of righteousness. Maybe I'm mistaken there, but there are many nations, perhaps India, China. On the other hand, though, when it came to the nation of Rome, their public relations constantly ground out the image of perfection and righteousness, even though internally they couldn't have been more of the opposite. A little clearer insight into this is the Catholic Church. Catholic Church is the baby of the Roman nation. And there perhaps has never been a greater effort in the world upon anybody to project such a image of righteousness, and at the same time having spilled so much innocent blood. In our day, we see this very often in the Western culture. In our day, in the Western culture, and perhaps only in the Western culture, there could exist an entity such as the UN, which is supposed to be the apex, highest point of law and justice in the world. Yet everyone knows that it's completely irrelevant to anything that might be truth. This again all comes from this society. So we see that Esav was not someone who was merely an amateur when it came to deceit. But Esav was the master of deceit. This is what the Torah tells us, he's high in the field. He was the master of deceit. He was like a chazir, that it is impossible to identify a chazir from a cow in relation to signs of kashrus. And only through internal examination did you thus identify. But externally, this would be impossible. This was the mediation. On the other hand, Esau was not someone who was not going to be a powerful figure. The Torah tells us that Esau would be Shnei Goyim, a nation, and he would be Geim, an aristocrat, and he would be Ula'on Milayim, an empire. The Torah was speaking of talent and power and human energy. Esav would be one of the greatest human energies in the world. Fact is, this chazal that we mentioned, that Yaakov and Esav were struggling over two worlds, because Esav was to be the master of this world. And this is something that we see historically. The contribution that the Roman Empire left for our world is that of modern technology, of modern advancement. The Torah tells us that in time to come, the Roman Empire will plead to HaKadosh Baruch Hu what they did in this world. So they will speak of the gigantic systems of roads that they created, of the gigantic systems of commerce that they created. These are the tremendous highway systems that we have built on the sea and on the land and in the air. These are the tremendous shopping malls, world commerce. The Romans built waterworks in places where nobody thought water could ever exist. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will answer them that whatever you did for your own sake. You built systems of roads to move your armies from one place to the other. You built commerce for purposes of your own selfish desires or immoral desires and so forth. But don't make any mistake to say that this is not going to be a power. The fact is, the Gemara tells us that from all of the empires in the world, the empire of Edom will be the greatest. There will be no empire that will ever be able to compare to Edom. tells us of the various empires that would rule. Yaakov had a dream later on in the Torah. He saw every empire will go up and come down. The empire of Edom he saw go up and he didn't see it come down. Because their strength will last for so long. Another point is that we see that the power of Esau will lie with the sword. Chazal tell us it's a steel. His power will be steel. And his empire, which will destroy the Beis Hamikdash, has 2,000 years ago, will rule over the world until the days of the Mashiach. And we still live in the civilization of the Western culture which was created by the Roman Empire. Now, if one gives the thought, you see that the world revolves around steel. Because the world that we live in today revolves around military might. Military might is based on steel. There was one military student that once told me that as far as military people are concerned, the greatest resource that a nation can have is that of steel. And the world today revolves around military might, revolves around steel. This is Al-Farbach Otichya, that he shall live by the sword. And much of the technology in the modern world is also built through steel. So this is Esau. Yaakov is just the opposite. The Torah tells us Yaakov was an Ishtam. Ishtam means that he did not know how to deceive. He couldn't deceive. What he meant, he would say. And if he would not mean it, he would not say it. This was the epitome of emes, of truth. Yosheva Halim, he dwelled in the tents of Torah. And the commentaries tell us another thing. Yosheva Halim, that he was not too involved in the physical world. While the descendants of Esau would be heavily involved in the physical world, where they would live in great cities, in great estates, in great mansions. Yaakov was a Yeshiva Olim. He would dwell in tents. His descendants would not be preoccupied with this world and the tents of Torah. Now, just an insight into Yaakov. In Parshas Vayishlach, states, Vayatzev Shom Mizbeach, Vayikra Lei Kel Elekei Yisrael. Vayatzev Shom Mizbeach, Yaakov made an altar. Yikra Lei, and he called him Kael, the God of Israel. Now Rashi asks him, Yaakov made an altar, and he called him the God of Israel. Who did he call? Who called who? So first Rashi says, maybe he called the altar the God of Israel. But how could he call the altar the God of Israel? So then Rashi explains that he referred to the altar, that this is the altar of God. But that's not the simple meaning of the apostle. It says, but you throw late. It does not say he called it, he called him. So Rashi brings the Gemara in Megillah, that the Gemara says, when I was saying to Dorsh from Shakur, Shmoku Koro Le Yaakov came, that he called him, Hashem called Yaakov, the God of Israel. This is what the Gemara says. Kael Elokei Yisrael. Hashem called Yaakov the God of Israel. The question arises, how could Hashem call Yaakov the God of Israel? How could Yaakov be the God of Israel? The Maral explains, because God who created the world, He made man as the king of this world. As it states, that he should rule over the entire world from the depths of the sea to the birds of the heaven. So he made Yaakov, he made man the God of the world, the king of the world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I am the king of the heavens and you are the king of the earth. This is what he made man. All of the animals of the world are the servants of man. Of all of mankind, Kodesh Baruch Hu said that Israel shall be the most perfect nation and they will be a king over all of the other nations. L'cho sitcho, I will make you as kings over the other nations. Israel comes from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov, as we mentioned before, is the father of Israel. And they are called in his name. His name is Yisrael. This means that the most perfect man that the world was to know would be Yaakov Avinu. The Gemara tells us that Yaakov, on the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the face of Yaakov is engraved. And later on, when Yaakov had a dream, he dreamt that angels were going up and down a ladder. The Gemara in Kulin says, what were the angels doing? They were going up and looking at the throne of Hashem, and they were going down and looking at the face of this man. And they saw that this face of man is identical to the face which is engraved on the throne of Hashem. And they wanted to kill him. Because they said, how could he take something from the throne of Hashem? And it says, Hashem Nitzav Elo, Hashem Baruch Hu had to guard him. The face of Yaakov Avinu is engraved in the throne of Hashem. This represents the perfection of man. Abraham gave birth to Yitzchok, but also to Yishmael. From Yishmael came out all of the Arab nations. These were imperfections. Yitzchak gave birth to Yaakov, but also to Esav. From Esav came out Edom and of the Roman nations. These were imperfections. But Yaakov gave birth to the 12 tribes where there were no imperfections. And this was Yisrael. The eventual perfection of all of the Aves of Abraham and Yitzchak, this manifested itself in Yaakov Avinu. This was Yisrael. So the most perfect of all mankind was to be Yaakov. And from Yaakov would come out the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel also was someone to contend with. They would not merely be a nation, but they would be Geim, they would be aristocrats, great aristocrats, setting for themselves a great standard in this world. And not only would they be aristocrats, but they will be a great empire. And what will be their quality? Ishtam, the opposite of deceit, the opposite of deception, the opposite of lie, the opposite of distrust, the opposite of distortion. Ishtam, they will be people of perfection, people of uprightness. Yoshe Ba'olim, their specialty will not be this world. As far as this world is concerned, it will suffice with tents. Their specialty will be the next world. Torah. In the next world. This is Yaakov. So we have Shnei Bonim, two sons being born. Once they will be born, they will separate because they are completely contrary to each other. And this was this is the great war, the great struggle between the destinies that was going on in the womb of Rivka. But she didn't know what was happening. And when she would pass the yeshiva of Shem Be'Ever, Yaakov would want to go out. His destiny would overflow in that direction. And she would pass a place of an idolatry, and Esau would want to go. And the Chazal say, what were they fighting over? They were fighting over the two worlds. Yaakov, that he was to become the master of the next world. This is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him the God, because he was the king of this world. He also wanted this world. Esau, that was to become the master of this world, he also wanted the next world. Therefore, they were fighting b'shnei ha'ilamais over the two worlds. This is what Rivka felt. And she went to find out what was happening. And Shem told her, these are not just simply children. These are nations. And not nations, but aristocratic nations. And not only nations, but empires, world empires. Ul'ol milayim yemotz. And both cannot rule at the same time. They are too contrary to each other. When one will rule, then the other will be down. And when the other will rule, it will be from the feet of the other one. Then when they gave birth, they were born, Yaakov was holding on to the heel of Esau. Because I'll tell the Siman, this is a sign that the kingdom of Esau will never come to its completion before Yaakov will destroy it. This will be at the time of the Melech HaMashiach. When the Melech HaMashiach will come, the descendant of Yaakov, he will wage war against Esau, against the empires of the world. And he will destroy them, and only the Melech HaMashiach. Zalzal is so great, will the power of Esau be, the power of Edom, that no one will ever destroy it, short of the Melech HaMashiach. Incidentally, if we try to find out exactly today who is this empire, there's another interesting chazal. That the sages tell us that so great was the steel of Esau that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that near the end of days, if it would be one power, it would destroy the world. Therefore, he divided them up into many superpowers. So it is difficult to define exactly who it is today, but rather many. This is the background of Yaakov and Esau, or of Yisrael and Edom. Now, Yitzchok loved Esau. It was impossible for Yitzchok to detect this in Esau. It's another reason also. Esau was the Bechor. He was the firstborn. And there was a prophecy given to Abraham that when Abraham gave birth to Yitzchok and Ishmael, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, "Ki be Yitzchok yikore lako Zora." Send away Ishmael, like Zora is saying, "Don't worry, because your seed shall go through Yitzchok." And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Be Yitzchok yikore lako Zora." Your seed shall go through part of Yitzchok. Not all of Yitzchok, but part of Yitzchok. This means there will be a further division. Yitzchok knew this. So Yitzchok knew that having two sons, his seed would be able, the brochos and the descendants of Israel, would be able to go only through part of him. There would be a further subdivision. So he knew that he must give the brochos either to Esau or to Yaakov. Esau was the firstborn. And by rights, therefore, the bracha should have gone to Esau. Secondly, Esau had tremendous powers. A nation like Edom, or a nation like Rome, can't be born from a second-rate kid. Tremendous, tremendous power is in Yitzchok, saw these powers. Thirdly, being the master of deception. Look at today, the greatest religion in the Western world is Christianity. Christianity came about from a handful of people that managed to mislead a few other people. Can you imagine how many millions and millions today of Christian followers there are, and how many billions of rands or dollars goes into this? This is one of the greatest gigantic hoaxes ever played on mankind. Yet it was successful. This was the power of Asia. And this is what the Torah testifies to. This is Sayyid Befiv, and he was the Chazir. So from the fact that he was the firstborn, and from the fact that he had these tremendous powers, qualities, and from the fact with his power of deception, Yitzchak wasn't too quite sure. So he chose Esau. He was the firstborn. Yes, he liked him. But if Gaeva says Yaakov, Rivka he didn't deceive him. Because when it comes to a woman, she's not deceived so much by external forces as much as a man. The Torah tells us, Bina Yesevin Ostala. She was given a sense, a sixth sense. She was given an intuition that does not go with logic. Many times contrary to logic. Logically, she'd gone after her own logic, she would have followed Yitzchak. She was given an intuition that many times is supersedes logic. And Rivka saw through this. And she ever says Yaakov, she loved Yaakov. Therefore, Yitzchak said to Esau, come and I will bless you. Rivka told Yaakov, no, you must take the brochures, because the destiny of Klal Yisrael rests on this. If Esau will get the brochures, there will be no Klal Yisrael, like we call it in the Vilna Gaon at the beginning. All in the favor of Klal Yisrael in this world and the next world rested on these brochures. These were the brochures that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Abraham when he told him to leave Ur Kasdim and go to Eretz Yisrael, and the brochures from the Akkad and so forth. She said, you must go at all costs to take these brochures from Esau. He is not the descendant of your father. Yaakov went and he took the brochures. When Esau came in and Yitzchak asked him, who are you? He said, I am Esau. Then the Torah tells us, Yitzchak trembled with a great fear. Why did he tremble? What was so gefellig? Why did he tremble? So Rashi brings from the Medrash Tanhuma that Yitzchak says, Chorad Yitzchak Omar Shema Oven Yeshbi Shebarachti Kot Livnei Godel Vishonisi Seda Yachas. His great tremble was is that he thought he committed a tragic act because he felt he was obligated to give to the firstborn. And by giving to Yaakov now, he went against this principle. So he felt that he gave away the brochus unjustly. And he had committed a tragic act. This is why he trembled with a great fear. Then as he was speaking to Esau, Esau said, now I know why he's called Yaakov. Yaakov means to grab a hold. Twice has he grabbed a hold of me. Yitzchak asked him, twice he grabbed a hold of me. Where did he grab a hold of you before? He said, before he grabbed a hold of me, when He took my birthright from it. Now he's grabbed the brochas from me. He's taking the brochas from me. Now Yitzchok said, he took the birthright from you. So Esav told him, yeah, he took the birthright from you. So Yitzchok said, this is what the Medrash Tanhuma says. Yitzchok Esav Mitzayik. Esav said that he's taken from me twice. So his father said, what did he take? He took my beperosi, he took my firstborn right, and now he took the brochas. So Yitzchok said, you have comforted me. I was afraid that I gave the brochas to the one who is not deserving of them. And about Yashuvas Adin, I did what was not right and just. Achshav lebechor berachti. Now, according to what you're telling me, lebechor beirachti, I bless the firstborn. If you sold him your birthright, then he is the firstborn. So now I'm not afraid anymore. Therefore, gam boruch niyah. Therefore, Yitzchok turned around now, and he said, gam boruch niyah. So this answers what we asked. First question was, is how was it possible that Yitzchok should take Esav or Roshi? This we explained. The second question was, if Yitzchok wanted to give Esav the brochas, so then why, after he gave Esav the brochas, did he say Gam Boruch, after he gave Yaakov the brochas, by mistake, did he say Gam Boruch Yiyah, that he should be blessed? So that the Medrash explains, because he wanted to give Esav the brocha, because he felt this is what he was required to. When he found out then, that Yaakov was the firstborn because Esav sold him the firstborn right. Then he said, Gam Boruch Niyah. He received the brochas, they belong to him. Now the third question. When Esav came and he said, give me also a brocha, Yaakov blessed him and he said, Al Chavu Tachitke, you shall live by the sword. Why did he give him such a brocha? If originally he wanted to bless him, so why did he give him a brocha al habachotikya? This is a declaration that he'll live by the sword, that he will be forever in war. The answer to this is Yitzchok knew that his descendants, the inheritance of Israel, will go only through one of his sons. This is what, as we mentioned before, because Kadosh Baruch Hu told Abraham, ki be Yitzchok yikor lecha zerah, that in Yitzchok will be your descendants, in part of Yitzchok and not in all of Yitzchok. So he knew there would be a subdivision. He thought that it would be Esav. Now, Esav was born entirely red. This is one of the reasons why he was called Edom, which means red. And the Chazal tell us this was a simon of Shechet Domin, this is a simon that he was full blood. Now there's a question, if he was born entirely red, and this was a sign that he would be Shechet Dam, spilling blood. So, how did Yitzchok interpret that? Yitzchok was willing to bless him. So the answer is, Yitzchok had interpreted this in a good way. You can interpret this in a good way also. The Gemara says this on Dovid HaMelech. Dovid HaMelech also was red, and also was born under a mazel, a certain mazel of Edre, a mazel of redness. But he used it levitzvah. David HaMelech fought wars for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he used the limits. So Yitzchok had thought that Esau would use this power of the mitzvah. When he realized that really the bracha should go to Yaakov, because Yaakov was the firstborn, he bought the birthright. Esau gave it up. And he did right. And he said, Gam Boruch Yiyah, that he should be blessed. Then he realized that the descendancy would go through Yaakov. So now he realized that Esav was not the descendant. So then he had a reinterpretation now of the fact that he was born red. And he made a declaration, Al Charba Chotichya, because he knew that the two sons would come to him. There would be constant war between the two. And if Yaakov was the power of good, and Esav would be the power of evil. So he made the declaration, Achar b'chotichya, that he will live by the sword. From here we see an explanation into what was going on in the Parsha. also into what the power was. The great power, the great ultimate power that Yaakov Avinu would have, this was Israel, and that Esav would have, the nations that would come from Israel. And Chazal tell us that the greatest empire that would be in the world would be the empire of Edom, which would be the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was one of the divisions of Edom. And that would be the empire that would rule, that would be the greatest ruler in the world. Until Yaakov would come and take it away from him. And that would be in the day of the Melech HaMashiach. We should be related to that in Hiram.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.